Good morning. You're listening to FloorDaily.net, and I'm Kemp Haar. This morning, my guest is Rob Dietz, the chief economist with the NAHB, the National Association of Home Builders. Rob, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
So, a little quick background on you before we get into what's going on in the housing market. You replaced David Crow, I guess, about a year ago, and you have a PhD in economics from Ohio State University. And prior to joining the NAHB in 2005, you actually worked with Congressional Joint Committee, right?
That's right. Did a lot of tax policy work on the Hill and tax policy work here the last 10 years at NAHB.
Yeah. So this is a good time for us to talk because you've just released some record numbers. The July numbers for new home sales are the highest level they've been since October 2007. It was up 12.4% from the previous month, but up, what, say 30 or so percent from the same month the prior year, right?
That's right. The pace in July was scorching. It was really high. We'll have to see if it gets revised down next month, but the overall trend for new home sales this year has been really positive. Year to date, we're up about 12% from where we were last year, so good growth, and inventory is really tight right now.
Yes, yeah, that's an annual pace of 654,000 units, which is a supply of 4.3 months, and the median sales price is at $295,000 now. So, you know, we talk about this being heated up. It's the best it's been since 2007, but it's still way off from the 2005 numbers, which were over a million units. What is your outlook that's going to continue to go upward, or give us your read on that?
Yeah, so I think the overall single-family market is still in recovery mode. Numbers have been generally positive over the last few years. We've been seeing, for example, in single-family starts growth of 10%, a little bit more each year. That's less than what we forecasted a few years back. And the reason for the sort of modest growth, I mean, it's still positive. We don't want to complain about 10%, 11% growth rates. But the fact that we're below those historic norms is because the industry is rebuilding its infrastructure. And that means what I've been calling the three L's, lots, labor, and lending. That lending is builder loans, acquisition, development, and construction loans. So it's going to take time for us to get back to what is a baseline level of activity of about 1.3 million single-family homes being built a year, and that's based on population growth and the need to replace older housing. We probably won't get there for another 3 or 4 years, and it's just a function of do we have enough construction workers, do we have enough building lots, and do we have enough financing for builders to go out and build those homes. In the meantime, inventory conditions for new and existing home markets are going to remain tight because the demand side of the market is really quite positive right now.
All right, so you think that we're going to continue to in an upward trend, and this could go on for several more years, is what you're saying?
Absolutely. So next year we're forecasting single-family starts growth of about 12%, the same for 2018. The one wild card out there is the macroeconomy. Will we continue to see this sort of modest, low levels of growth going forward? There's potential for a recession sometime.
Right.
We're not forecasting one, but we always have to kind of keep that in mind.
Well, let's talk about a couple of things as far as trends of what's going on with housing. Talk about home size, if you would.
Yeah, so one of the challenges in the market, and certainly something that our friends at the Realtors constantly admonish builders for not doing, is building entry-level product. That's a place where we see particularly tight inventory conditions, that entry-level space. And to the question of why aren't builders building for first-time buyers, well, they have been. They're called apartments.
Yeah.
The demand has been stronger on that rental side. I think what we're seeing now, though, is a bit of hints that you're seeing more and more builders try to get into the entry-level space. Now, let's be clear. Home building is always going to be dominated by the move-up buyer. Historically, about 70% of new homes were for move-up buyers. Right now it's 80%, so there has been the shift. But what we're seeing in the data, we've seen a little bit of easing off of typical new home size, some declines for the first time in 2 or 3 years. It's still at elevated levels, but it's an indication that the mix of homes being built has begun to change. And I think the most clear evidence of that is townhouse construction. Typical single-family home in the country is about 2,600 square feet. Typical townhouse is just under 2,000 square feet. And we've seen townhouse growth up about 25% year over year. And so it's outpacing the overall single family market. It's still only about 12 or 13% of the total single family construction market, but I think it's an indication you see small, medium, and national builders trying to build an entry-level product because they know there are a lot of renters that are millennials, that we know they want to become home buyers. It's just a question of finding the right house. So we're going to see a bit of an expansion and broadening of what builders are building over the next year or two.
Okay, one question about that is, as far as the size, you know, smaller size. Because another trend, obviously, would be the baby boomers wanting to downsize. And I guess that's a different type of house because it's got better finishes in it, right?
That's right. So you're talking about an older, wealthier buyer, so yeah. it's going to be higher end. You know, to a certain extent, though, when we look at the data, we don't see as much downsizing as I think a lot of people predicted a few years back. I don't know if that's preferences, that baby boomers are sort of unwilling to move into a smaller home because it does mean maybe downsizing the amount of stuff that they own. We do see some movement. Obviously, there's a lot of growth in the South and places that are typical retirement home communities. But on the remodeling side of the market, you do see an uptick in things like age-in-place home improvement activity. That's helping to support the remodeling market and is an indication that you do have a lot of retirees who are going to stay in their existing homes. They're going to make structural changes, things for aging, but also just because they've been in the home for a long time and it's time to update those aesthetic design characteristics. So that's a good thing for the remodeling market. I think that the dog that hasn't barked is the idea that you'll see a lot of baby boomers move from the single family home in the suburbs that's now an empty nest situation and maybe moving into a condo in a central business district area to be near restaurants and museums. There hasn't been a whole lot of activity. And, in fact, new condo construction has actually been quite weak, even as you see existing condo sales in certain cities like New York and Miami be really hot in recent years.
Well, let's go to the millennials. You mentioned them a minute ago. There was a problem there with all this education debt. They were kind of locked out of the market. Are you seeing an uptick in millennials buying homes now?
You know, a little bit of growth. I think the key thing is on the millennials, we're seeing growth in household formations, which is the combination of both renter demand and owner-occupied demand. I'm of two minds on the student loan issue. Knowing older millennials, I'm a kind of a younger Gen Xer, you know, the student loan issues are an impediment to buying homes. Certainly today's graduates have higher student loan debt than prior generations. At the same time, the primary challenge for a younger buyer, prospective home buyer, to get into the marketplace is less meeting, say, the debt-to-income ratios. It's accumulating the down payment. Now, to the extent that paying and servicing your student loan debt is impeding the ability to save for that down payment, there's clearly a direct effect. But I think what we're really seeing is the back-end effects of pretty limited wage gains. If we got a little bit more income growth, the idea of accumulating more student loan burdens would seem a little bit smaller and it'd be a little bit easier to save. So I don't want to necessarily blame all the problems of the lower end of the housing market on student loans. It's clearly a negative issue. But, you know, we've got an unemployment rate less than 5%. We have job openings in construction and other sectors certainly rising. That suggests that in the years ahead we're going to see an acceleration in income growth, and I think those student loan burdens will look a little bit smaller when you get people under age 35, a little bit more of a paycheck, and the ability to save increases.
All right, two more quick questions. One is the mix of multifamily to single family. Are we going to start to see a shift with more emphasis on single and less on multi?
We are, and it's like everything else in the sort of housing recovery. It's just going to take a little bit longer than I think people expected a few years back. I mean, the amazing stat right now that I recently kind of worked through is that when you look at homes under construction, typically about 30% of units under construction are multifamily. Right now, it's just under 60%. So there's been this massive shift in terms of the types of units being built to the multifamily side. And multifamily led the way. I think our forecast now going forward is a bit of a dip in total multifamily starts for this year in 2016, and then kind of a leveling off over the next few years. Not a big decline, but a leveling off at above normal levels of production, normal being about 330,000 units a year. You know, we think that the industry can support slightly higher volume than that. On the other side, single family is going to continue to grow. So we're expecting 10 to 12% growth rates in single family for 16, 17, and 18. And so the mix of units being built by builders is going to shift increasingly to single family. And that's the demographic effects. Those millennials who are renting, and they're going to rent longer, and they're going to get married later, and they're going to have kids older. But the traditional life cycle goals that other generations have had, Gen Xers and baby boomers, apply to millennials as well. And it seems like all the consumer survey data suggests they want to buy and live in single family and in the suburbs with their kids. So that's what's going to play out over the next few years.
All right, one last question. What effect, if any, do you think the presidential election will have on this rate of growth?
You know, so in terms of thinking about the macroeconomic effects, GDP, you know, Democrat or Republican, this is a particularly unusual race. Typically, when a new president comes into office, for the first 2 years, you're going to get some kind of stimulus effect. They're going to either, if they're a Democrat, they're probably going to want to increase government spending. If they're a Republican, they're going to want to cut taxes. From a fiscal policy perspective, those are both stimulus effects. It's year three and year four where after the political business cycle has an impact that you tend to have the hangover of sorts. I think the key thing with the presidential election is twofold. One, it's important to keep in mind it's not just the presidential election, that who controls Congress, particularly the House, under the leadership right now of Speaker Paul Ryan, matters a really great deal in terms of fiscal policy and tax policy and housing finance policy. So don't forget the congressional elections. On the presidential election, it's going to be an issue of how do you feel about government regulations. And so if we have a Clinton administration, I think we'll see increased labor and environmental rules. Under a Trump administration, a rollback of business regulations. So I think that's the way to look at it from the executive branch in terms of housing finance and tax reform and the other issues that affect building and small businesses and housing. Keep your eye on who controls the House and who controls the Senate.
Okay, great. Well, I appreciate your read on this. Again, been talking to Rob Dietz, the chief economist with the NAHB, and you've been listening to Kempar and FloridaDaily.net.